tobacco use is really high in Bangladesh, and not only in Bangladesh, in Southeast Asia. And in Bangladesh, 35.3% of adults use any form of tobacco.
While the number of people who use tobacco products is dramatically down in most Western countries, the fight against tobacco is far from over in developing economies like Bangladesh, where tobacco sales bring in a lot of tax dollars.
I'm not saying that tax revenue is not important, but they have to find out some alternate source of collecting tax revenue and not only relying on the tobacco taxation.
I'm Rumana Hawk. I'm a health economist by training, and I'm a professor of Department of Economics at University of Dhaka. I am also executive director at ARC Foundation, which is a research NGO in Bangladesh.
Welcome to the fourth episode of our special collaborative podcast series with the International Economic Association, where we showcase the economists behind invaluable research in places we don't hear enough about, like Bangladesh, where Rumana Hook delves into the real costs of tobacco dependency.
The public health impact is much higher. The adverse impact on health is much higher than the revenue collected.
Other episodes in the series feature economists from Kenya, Turkey, and Colombia. In this episode, IMF podcast contributor Rhoda Metcalf sits down with Hook to discuss her research into why Bangladesh needs to kick its tobacco habit.
I know that tobacco is very popular in Bangladesh. What is it? More than a third of adults use tobacco. But are we talking about cigarettes? I mean, is this a lot of people smoking?
This includes smoking tobacco and smokeless tobacco. And smoking tobacco, there is a cigarette and also a bidi in Bangladesh, which is a cheaper handmade cigarette.
Right.
Around 18% people use smoked tobacco.
Okay.
And among them, 36% are men and 0.8% are women.
So it's almost entirely men.
It's almost entirely men and very little among women. And if we look into the smokeless tobacco, here the women consume more of smokeless tobacco. So around 25% women consume smokeless tobacco, whereas in men it's 16%.
Oh, so more women are using e-cigarettes or
smokeless tobacco.
So is that like the e-cigarettes or what is that?
Oh, no. These are chewing tobacco.
Oh, I see.
So smokeless tobaccos are the chewing tobacco. So you put it in your mouth and you chew and you swallow.
Oh.
So these are really harmful for health. Hmm. So smokeless tobacco is very popular in Southeast Asia, including Bangladesh. And it's integrated into the social norms and culture. Like in a wedding or in any event, you will have smokeless tobacco served after the meal. So it's very common.
So what's the cost of all this tobacco use, both to the individual and to the country in terms of public health costs and so on? Do you have a sense of that?
Yes, this is really costly. And one study was done in 2018 that shows that tobacco-related illness caused 30,000 crore taka. It's in Bangladeshi taka, whereas the tax collected from the tobacco products were 22,000 crore Bangladeshi taka.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the cost was much higher than the revenue collected from the tobacco products.
Right.
And approximately per month, one person spends $14 for buying cigarettes and around approximately $5 for buying bidi.
Is that a lot for the average person?
You know, if we consider the price of the products, in reality, the price is really cheap, but the income of the population is also low in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And a large portion of their income is spent for buying these harmful products. And it's one of the greatest risk factors for non-communicable disease. We have to bear the cost of treating those diseases, including cancer, diabetes, hypertension, oral cancer. In Bangladesh, every year, 161,000 people die due to tobacco consumption.
So I guess the big question is, what's the solution? How can you get people to smoke less, to use less of this, chewing tobacco? I know that you've tried to use economic tools to search for these solutions. Where have you focused your attention, taking this from an economic perspective?
My research focuses on tobacco taxation.
Right.
This tobacco taxation is one of the cost-effective tools for reducing tobacco consumption by making the tobacco price higher and less affordable for the people. But in Bangladesh, the tax structure is flawed because it's a tiered tax structure. So they divide the cigarette into four types, premium type cigarette, high type and medium and low. So each tier has different price and different tax rate on each tier. So it makes the tax system very complex.
Mm-hmm.
So collecting the tax is a huge task for the authority. And that's why there is a possibility of avoiding the tax by the industry.
But how do they get around it?
So it makes possible that the consumer, they switch the brand. If the price of premium brand goes up, they can switch to the medium brand or even low tier.
Oh, I see.
So instead of quitting tobacco, they're just switching the products.
So what's the rationale from the government's point of view of keeping making it so complicated instead of just having, you know, one tax rate on all cigarettes?
So historically, it's the fourth tier. So now the authority, National Board of Revenue, they are used to follow the same process. So any reform needs lots of motivation and leadership from their side. And at the same time, it's the industry interference is there. So they also try to create some pressure on the government. There are some myths that if you change the current structure, the tax revenue might go down. So of course, there are issues related to the capacity of the authority to make the changes. But at the same time, there are pressure from the industry as well.
So what percentage of the taxes that are collected come from the tobacco industry?
So the tax revenue that National Board of Revenue collects contribute around 9 to 11% of that tax revenue.
That's
but there are other sources of revenue as well. Government collects fees and other. But for the tax revenue, around 9 to 11% of the tax revenue comes from the tobacco industry.
Wow. So I guess that creates a kind of conundrum for the government, right? I mean, because on one side, tobacco is bringing in all this revenue, but then it's also creating all these public health costs on the other side, right?
Yeah. In a developing country like Bangladesh, government relies heavily on the tobacco taxation. There are two ministries, the Ministry of Health. Their priority is, of course, the public health gain. But National Board of Revenue, we cannot deny that they rely on the tobacco taxation for their tax revenue as well. So changing the tax structure overnight might create some sort of threat to the National Board of Revenue that, okay, they might lose the revenue. Mm-hmm. So we do understand that. But at the same time, it's also important for us to advocate and make the government realize that, no, the public health impact is much higher, the adverse impact on health is much higher than the revenue collected for a year. Government has to find out the pathway of collecting tax revenue from other sources and mm-hmm. reduce their reliance on the tobacco products. So we need to set some target and we have to create the roadmap that how we can achieve the tobacco-free Bangladesh at some point.
Right. So, I mean, that's the long-term goal. But I can see how in the short term, raising tobacco taxes has the advantage of, you know, working both sides of the equation. And you're discouraging tobacco use by making it more expensive while keeping that tax revenue flowing. And I know that some of your research has focused on debunking some of the arguments that the tobacco industry has raised against tobacco taxes. Can you tell me about that?
So the industry always... whenever there is any initiative of increasing tax or making any tax structure reform, they come up with some myths. And one of the propaganda is that the smuggling will go up.
Uh-huh.
Or illicit trade will go up.
Of cigarettes, right. Mm-hmm.
But there is evidence that the tobacco price in the neighboring countries is higher than the tobacco price in Bangladesh. So there is no reason of smuggling high-priced tobacco products from neighboring countries.
And didn't you do some research to find out what percentage of the cigarettes were actually illegal?
Yes, and we found that around 2% of the tobacco products in the country is illicit, not following the tax properly.
So the problem of illegal cigarettes is actually pretty small.
Very small. It's the illicit trade was only 2% that we found. We are still analyzing data and some more publication is in the pipeline within this illicit trade study.
How do you conduct a study like that? How do you find out what percentage of cigarettes being sold in a particular area is actually illegal versus legal?
Yeah, so there are different methods. One of is pack analysis. So you can collect the you know, cigarette packets from the vendors, or you can collect from, you know, the trash from the street.
Well, that's interesting, though. You're like, how do you do that? You actually send people in to go through the trash and to ask them for, can you give us all of your packets? Or how does that work?
Yes, so we can collect those from the consumer, and we can request them to give it back to us, or we can ask the vendors who are selling the single stick cigarettes to keep those packets, and we can collect from the vendors, point of sale vendors as well. But we need the packets which are not torn and which are like intact. A certain percentage of the packet should have the health warning and pictorial warning. So you can also check in the packet that whether the barcode is there, QR code is there, as per the country rule.
Right. Sounds very labor intensive trying to gather all this stuff.
Yes. You need the experts as well, the training that how you check those packages as well.
So is your research having any impact on government policy? I mean, is this an issue that the governments care about?
Thank you. That's a very good question. So when we first did a study on the children, school children, at year five, the study was done in 2015-16. And we checked their saliva, and we found that 95% of the children are exposed to secondhand smoke in Bangladesh.
You could see that in their saliva, that they were being exposed.
Yes. We collected the saliva and we tested in the UK, and we found that the 95% of children had nicotine in their saliva, which indicated that they are exposed to secondhand smoke.
Right.
And we did the study again in 2022-23, and this time we did the study in 34 schools with 1,300 plus students, and we found that 92% children are exposed to secondhand smoke. So this is really alarming, though there are policy for, you know, banning smoking in public places. Mm-hmm. Due to the weak implementation of the policy, people do smoke in public places and children are exposed to those secondhand smoke. And there is no law that can, you know, reduce the smoking at home. So children are still exposed to secondhand smoke at home as well.
Was the government interested in this study? Did you get some reaction to it?
Yes. So this study was publicized in national newspapers, and the tobacco control advocates really, you know, used the information in different platforms. And it was hugely discussed that how we can reduce the secondhand smoke exposure, especially to children and women. And for that, we have to strengthen the law. And the definition of public place has been strengthened now. It is in the current version of the law, which are the public places that has been clearly defined. And more examples have been included. So I believe that the study we did definitely triggered the discussion in different platforms for strengthening the law to ban the smoking in public places and defining the public places more robustly.
Wow. I'm just kind of curious, why have you focused so much research on tobacco? I mean, why do you care about this issue?
Yeah, when I was young, my uncle and my father both were smokers, and at the time I really did not like the smell, and I really felt that, oh, I wish my father quit smoking. And then when I was growing up, I found that my father really got a nasty cough. And when he went to visit a doctor, and doctor said that you have to quit smoking, otherwise, I mean, this cough and your lung condition will not be improved. So I think my father took it very seriously, and he realized that how it's impacting his health. And also he realized that he doesn't want his children to follow him and be a smoker in future.
Right.
Especially my brother was also very young at the time. So considering these two, I think he quitted smoking. And later on, I think in my family, there was none who smoked. And I really feel good that my home atmosphere is really tobacco smoke-free, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's a great thing. So I understand that later, when you were in university, that's when you actually started researching this issue, right?
So when I started my PhD in University of Leeds, UK, one of the senior lecturer at the time was Professor Kamran Siddiqui. So he first involved me in a small scale study on smokeless tobacco. And then he also encouraged me to work with him on tobacco cessation. So that was back in 2012-13. So I really found the massive negative health impact of tobacco and the economic burden of tobacco consumption, and also how the tobacco industry is manipulating the entire landscape of policymaking. And I felt that if I can generate evidence of what intervention really works in low resource settings and how tobacco taxation can be implemented properly to reduce tobacco consumption, how the pricing mechanism and tobacco taxation, tracking, tracing system can be improved, and all these can really help to achieve public health gains. So that motivated me.
Do you think that you've made any inroads into getting the government to consider making changes?
Yes, we are encouraging the government to shift from ad valorem tax to the specific tax.
So going from multiple taxes to a single tax.
And this advocacy is going for some time. So at least now we can say that government understands that, yes, if we shift from ad valorem to the specific tax, the tax will not go down. We have been able to create some interest among the government to understand that how we can make the shift. And they also ask us to give the examples of which countries have gained from this shift. And they also requested us to provide some training also that how the shift can be made from ad valorem to specific tax.
So what are you looking towards in terms of future research? Are there other questions that you really want to put to the test?
Yes, my interest is mainly on non-communicable disease. So I'm still interested to look into the tobacco tax system, pricing of tobacco products, how we can make the pricing more
motivational.
Yeah, more motivational.
Right.
But beyond tobacco control, I think my interest also lies in other products which are also a threat for public health, like sugar-sweetened beverage. So my research interest also is now the tax system of sugar-sweetened beverage and this type of other products which are harmful for health.
Wow, that's a really interesting issue. Romana Hawke, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. We've really enjoyed having a chance to understand your research better.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Romana Hawke was speaking with Rhoda Metcalf as part of our special limited run podcast series called Driving Change, the product of a collaboration with the International Economic Association's Women in Leadership in Economics initiative. The series is also featured in the March edition of Finance and Development magazine. Check it out at imf.org/FND. And go to imf.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to find the other podcasts in this series featuring economists from Turkey, Kenya, and Colombia. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.